So we're continuing our series, we're calling it Diamonds in the Rough. It's basically kind of heroes of the Old Testament. But I've realized I've misplaced the clicker. And then I've realized it's in my pocket. So I have nobody to blame except myself. But today, I really want us to think through one question, okay? And it's this. What would it be like, what would it look like in your life to be free from insecurity? What would it be like in your life if you were free from insecurity? I'm not promising that I will achieve this in the next half an hour. I'm just asking you the question, okay? What would it look like if you were free from insecurity? You might not call yourself a Christian this morning. That's fine. We're glad you're here. I'm not going to assume that you believe this stuff, but in the time we have together, I want you to just think about this. If what I'm saying about God is true, how great would this be? If you're not a Christian, I want to invite you to think about that. So before getting into things, we're looking this morning at a character called Jacob. There he is. It's a genuine picture from 3,000 years ago. By the way, website called The Brick Testament. Absolutely wonderful. They recreate all of the Bible out of Lego. It's amazing. Fantastic. Before we get into Jacob's life, I just want to say something about how we tend to read the Bible. Whether we call ourselves Christians or not, there's an instinctive way that people tend to read the Bible, or they engage with the Bible. And they kind of open it and go, right, what's it going to tell me to do? What's the example or the moral thing? What's the thing I'm supposed to do? How am I supposed to be good? And everybody does it. Do you know what I mean? So you kind of look at a famous Bible character like David. You know, he has this amazing life. Or you look at Abraham or Esther. And, you know, there's all these great people. And what we do is we open the Bible and we look at their life and go, oh, there's a good virtue there. I'll try and do that. I'll try harder to be good. That's surely what the Bible is asking me to do. But there's two problems with that. Firstly, the Bible is not primarily about setting us a moral example. And secondly, all of the characters in the Bible, bar one, are as flawed as we are. All of them, bar one, are as flawed as we are. And he's God. I'm glad to say today we're looking at somebody that really personifies humanity in the life of this guy, Jacob. He shows up in Genesis right at the beginning of the Bible. He lives his life and dies over the course of about 20 chapters of text. And then he gets mentioned and mentioned again throughout the rest of the Bible. In fact, after God, Jacob is the most mentioned person in the Bible. Do you know that? He's the most mentioned person in the Bible. And yet it's very hard to find much written about him. When those of us who deliver sermons like this prepare, we often try and read books, believe it or not. It doesn't always show. We try and read books about whatever we're speaking on. Now, if you wanted to do a sermon on David, you'd find hundreds of books. You go on Amazon and try and find a book about Jacob, there's basically nothing. Hardly anybody's even written about him. And yet he's the most mentioned person in the Bible after God. Why does he have that honor? I'll tell you at the end. But he's brilliant because Jacob is not a good example. I love that about him. He's just an ordinary bloke. But there's something I want to focus on about Jacob's life, which is this. His lifelong battle with insecurity. Lifelong battle with insecurity. And it's interesting to me because I think that's a battle that everybody has. Anybody want to claim they don't struggle with insecurity? No, didn't think so. So this is relevant to all of us. We're just going to look at a few episodes of his life, starting here. This is with his birth. This is in Genesis chapter 25. And when the time came to give birth, Rebekah discovered that she did indeed have twins. The first one was very red at birth and covered with thick hair like a fur coat. So they named him Esau. Then the other twin was born with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so they named him Jacob. Isaac, was the dad, was 60 years old when the twins were born. As the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter. He was an outdoorsman, but Jacob had a quiet temperament, preferring to stay at home. Isaac loved Esau because he enjoyed eating the wild game Esau brought home, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Okay, so Jacob is born a twin. He's very different from his brother, as his brother. Esau's red and hairy. He's into hunting and being outdoors. He's a man's man. He kills animals and he likes tractors and sports. That's Esau. Jacob comes out of the womb, grabbing his heel. That's Jacob on the right, just in case you're confused. Jacob comes out of the womb, grabbing Esau's heel. Interestingly, little detail, and it kind of sets the pattern for his life. He's always trying to catch up somehow with Esau and how Esau's seen. He's always trying to make things happen for himself so that he doesn't miss out. That's Jacob's life. He has a quiet temperament. He's more into kind of reading in the corner and arranging all of his stamp collection and just kind of indoor-y kind of pursuits like that. And right from their younger days, Dad liked Esau more. His dad liked his brother more than he liked him. Anybody had family like that, where there were favorites? Jacob's mum liked him more, but his dad liked his brother more. In my family, my parents were always at pains. There's, you know, three of us siblings, me, my brother, and my sister. They're always at pains to tell us, you know, we love you all equally. So sometimes we'd have those little arguments when you're really little, don't you? You're like, oh, mum and dad love me more. No, they love me more. And my parents would come in and say, no, we love you all the same. Don't worry, we're all the same. And as soon as they left the room, I was the oldest, and I'd go, yeah, but they've loved me for longer. See, even in earliest childhood, there's that desire to be loved, isn't there? To be worthwhile, to have the favor of whoever raises you. And Jacob knew that even though his mum preferred him, his dad preferred his brother. And there's something about boys, about men, that they just want their dad's favor. I think that's just almost universally the case. They just want dad to value them. Jacob doesn't have that. He is the second favorite out of two. His dad doesn't like him as much. I did a bit of reading around this, and there's loads of psychological research on the effects of even perceiving yourself to be the less favored sibling from either parent. It used to be common, apparently, in this country for parents to have a favorite sibling. It's not so much the case now, it doesn't seem. And in Jacob's case, it defines his life. This thing of not being the favorite, I think, defines his life. And you can understand it, can't you? He just wants to be loved like everybody else. That's the craving behind every insecurity we have. It's the fear that we're not loved because we're not valuable, and we're not valuable because we don't look or say or do the right things. It's the fear that we're not valuable. How often did it enter Jacob's head to think, I wish I was more like Esau. Wish I was more like Esau, and then Dad would love me just as much. How often did that enter his head? So we can be insecure, though, about all sorts of things. We can be insecure about our looks, our talents, sound of our voice, our wealth, our social position, our career, how good we are at parenting. Does my partner really love me? Those kind of things. And it crosses the whole of life. And it's virtually all to do with how we're seen by other people, isn't it? What we're insecure about. I recently watched a documentary about this man. If you're not into football, this man is Cristiano Ronaldo. He plays for Real Madrid, one of the top teams in the world. He's paid about £500,000 a week to play football. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? He's unbelievably good at football as well. He's probably, in my estimation, one of the top 10, 20 best players who's ever played football. He has an amazing life. He only dates supermodels. He gets loads of awards, wins loads of trophies. But I watched this documentary about him, and the overriding feeling I had at the end was that I felt sorry for him. Now, I'm not going to say I don't want all of that nice lifestyle that he has, except the supermodels, darling. I'm very happy with you. I'm not going to say I don't want all that nice life. That would be lovely to get paid, you know, millions of pounds to play football and win loads of trophies. Lovely. But the thing that was really stood out to me is he's a very, very insecure man. He's defined by it. He has to be the best. It consumes him. And he constantly needs his mum and his agent to tell him how great he is. He's just on the phone to them all the time with them telling him how great he is. And he can't deal with it if people don't think he's the best in the world. And he may well be, but he can't deal with it if people don't think that he is. I have no idea where his insecurity comes from, but I think it's probably the same as for all of us. He wants to justify his existence by being able to say, I am worthwhile because of this, because I'm the best at this thing. That gives me my valuableness. Like all of us, there's something inside of him that needs something to hold on, something to cling to give worth. It's always the same root issue. We worry about being a person who is not worth it, who is not worth loving. That's behind insecurity. And it comes out, doesn't it, in all sorts of ways when a person is insecure. Ways like this. Jealousy. Fishing for compliments. You know when somebody does that? You can kind of tell that they want to be complimented. Not being able to kind of cope with feedback, stuff like that. Having to be right. Being overly competitive. Being very withdrawn. Being negative about other people, trying just too hard all the time to be liked, having to work every hour of the day, being obsessed about your appearance. I mean, I could go on and on. There are so many ways that an insecurity affects how a person behaves, aren't there? And it can just define your life and change what you do. But the irony is, the more a person's behavior is shaped by their insecurity, the more difficult they are to have a good relationship with. Have you ever noticed that? The more somebody is defined by their insecurity, the more difficult they are to have a good relationship with. And I think we have a radar, I think, don't we, of when we're around somebody who is just so insecure that it affects them. You know, you can just kind of tell. When I was at university, I had a friend who, lovely bloke in lots and lots of ways, but he was so insecure about being liked that he tried to do things all the time to show you how competent he was or how capable he was or how well-connected he was. And it didn't make me like him more. That's the irony. The thing that he wanted was to be liked. But because he battled so much to be liked, it made him more difficult to be with. Have you experienced anybody like that? It's hard, isn't it? In Jacob's life, his way of dealing with insecurity is to fight for things. He doesn't think anybody cares enough to make his life work for him. His dad prefers his brother, so he just goes out and makes it work for himself, whether he needs to lie or argue or fight or run. And if you read through his life, it's characterized by those things. He's an insecure man. Let's look a little bit later in his life. So Jacob went out and got young goats for his mother. Rebekah took them and prepared a delicious meal just the way Isaac liked it. Then she took Esau's favorite clothes, which were in the house, and gave them to her younger son Jacob. She covered his arms and the smooth part of his neck with the skin of the young goats. Then she gave Jacob the delicious meal, including freshly baked bread. So Jacob took the food to his father. "My father," he said. "Yes, my son," Isaac answered. "Who are you, Esau or Jacob?" Jacob replied, "It's Esau, your firstborn son. I have done as you told me. Here is the wild game. Now sit up and eat it so you can give me your blessing." Isaac asked, "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" "The Lord your God put it in my path," Jacob replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come closer so I can touch you and make sure that you really are Esau." So Jacob went closer to his father, and Isaac touched him. "The voice is Jacob's, but the hands are Esau's," Isaac said. But he did not recognize Jacob because Jacob's hands felt hairy just like Esau's. So Isaac prepared to bless Jacob. "But are you really my son Esau?" he asked. "Yes, I am," Jacob replied. So Jacob took the food to his father, and Isaac ate it. He also drank the wine that Jacob served him. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come a little closer and kiss me, my son." So Jacob went over and kissed him. And when Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he was finally convinced, and he blessed his son. He said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of the outdoors, which the Lord has blessed. From the dew of heaven and the richness of earth, may God always give you abundant harvest of grain and bountiful new wine. May many nations become your servants, and may they bow down to you. May you be the master over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. All who curse you will be cursed, and all who bless you will be blessed." Bit of an unusual little story, that, isn't it? But let me ask you, how far do your insecurities push you? How far do they push you? What do you do or not do because of them? What have you missed out on in life? What relationships have been damaged because of your insecurity? Let me tell you a little bit about myself at this point. It's been fed back to me that I come across as quite confident. People tell me that. And generally, it's probably true. I don't worry too much about things. I don't generally worry too much about what people think of me. But it hasn't always been this way. I spent my early life in the northwest of England. My family are all from Blackpool, wonderful seaside town. Wasn't a joke. And when I was very little, when I was 7 years old, we moved south. Family moved to London for a few years, then we lived in Milton Keynes for a few years. And I became very self-conscious about my voice because I had a very broad Lancastrian accent, more so than I do now. And people kept commenting on the way I spoke. Some people would kind of make a bit of a joke about how I spoke. And I've kind of developed this thing of hating the sound of my own voice. I was insecure about the sound of my own voice. And I would even, as things went over time, I'd avoid pronouncing certain words. It even went down to that because I tried to find different ways of saying things so that I wouldn't have to say certain words because I knew that they sounded funny to people. And even when I got to university, it was still a thing. And at our university, I was part of, there's like a kind of Christian union, so like all the Christians at university would do stuff every week. And sometimes we would have someone who would come and give a talk. And one of the things that I was supposed to do was introduce the speaker, which takes no time at all. It's not a difficult job. But I would always find ways to not do it and get somebody else to do it so that I wouldn't have to speak in front of other people for 30 seconds. That was how much I was insecure about the sound of my own voice. Just didn't like it. Still don't like hearing it on a tape or something, but I think most people that's true. And to be honest, some of those thoughts still enter my head now. I still, you know, I think it's largely gone, but there's an element of that insecurity there. And I'm in my mid-30s, and that still affects me, kind of thinking about that sort of thing. But now I do a job where I have to stand in front of people and speak. And I live in the south of England again, where everybody's got a different voice to me by choice. But it's not a story of me heroically overcoming something. I'll tell you what happened at the end, but certainly God changed that insecurity for me. Not that I've completely arrived, but he's working on it. Everyone's insecurities do different things to them. Jacob's insecurities make him a liar. He's a liar. So in the story, Jacob's dad Isaac is now quite old. His eyesight's gone. And the custom of the time was that a dad would kind of pass on a birthright. That's what they do. And it's a bit like how we would pass on an inheritance. You know, you pass on the money and the house and everything. And usually in that culture, it was to the oldest son. It wasn't just the family possessions, though. It was kind of a spiritual passing on of sort of leadership of the family. So it's a very significant thing. So Esau is supposed to be the one who inherits the stuff. And Isaac's quite happy about that. That's his favorite. But Jacob's mum, Rebecca, loves him more. So she helps him with this devious plan to trick Esau out of the inheritance. This is not great parenting, by the way. It's like something out of EastEnders, isn't it? It's really, really unhealthy family dynamic going on here. But when Jacob steals his brother's birthright by pretending to be Esau, he knows that it's not real. He must do. He knows it's not real. He knows that his dad really prefers his brother, but he's willing to pretend that he's Esau so that just for a moment he can get a tiny sense of that feeling of love from his father that he craves. Even though he knows it's not real, he's still willing to dress up as Esau and pretend, to have his dad speak words over him that he's always wanted to hear. And he lives a lie, knowing this blessing isn't real. It's like cheating on a board game to win, even though if you do it, you know in yourself that you cheated. It's not worth anything, is it, if you cheated? And that's exactly what he does here. And the first time in his life that Jacob mentions God in the whole of his story is to tell a lie. His mum prepares the food, but he says that God provided it as a way of explaining why he brought it back so quickly. Do you see what happens? Jacob's insecurities about his dad's love prod him into all sorts of lies. They prod him into being somebody he's not. And his dad has a big share of the blame for how his life goes, but Jacob chooses how to respond, and he chooses things that cause more damage. Because when Esau finds out about this, he swears he will kill Jacob. He's furious, and they don't see each other for decades. Ruins the family. I wonder if anything similar to that has happened to you and your own family, either because of you or because of somebody else. Because people have lied and people have done the wrong thing because of insecurity. Let's fast forward a little bit. This is towards the end of Jacob's life. During the night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two servants, and his 11 sons and crossed the Jabbok River with them. After taking them to the other side, he sent over all his possessions. This left Jacob all alone in the camp, and a man came and wrestled with him until dawn began to break. When the man saw that he would not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of its socket. Then the man said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." "What's your name?" the man asked. He replied, "Jacob." "Your name will no longer be Jacob," the man told him. "From now on you'll be called Israel, because you've fought with God and with men and have won." "Please tell me your name," Jacob said. "Why do you want to know my name?" the man replied. Then he blessed Jacob there. Jacob named the place Peniel, which means face of God, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been spared." The sun was rising as Jacob left Peniel, and he was limping because of the injury to his hip. So this is later in Jacob's life. He's now got a group of wives. I'm not advocating that. He's got a group of wives, loads of kids, loads of stuff. He's fought hard and he's made life work for himself. But guess what? It's done nothing to fix his problems. It's done nothing to fix his insecurities. You see, just before this passage, we learn that Jacob is about to meet Esau again for the first time in years. Esau now has a big entourage of his own. He has an army of 400 men. And he's about to meet him again. So Jacob is a bit nervous about the reunion. And this passage is right before they meet. And let's just admit it, this passage, things get very weird. This is weird. Jacob moves his family across the river. So basically, he puts his family in front of himself between him and Esau. Nice one, Jacob. And then it specifically says, Jacob was all alone in the camp. It's probably the first time he's been on his own for years. And you have to know, at this point, Jacob is in his 90s. He's not a young man. It would be fair to say he's not at his physical peak. I said this was about insecurity, and God addresses Jacob's insecurity right here. In the last way you would ever think, he doesn't give him an extended counseling session about all of his childhood issues. He appears physically and wrestles with him. Very strange way of going about things. And then he injures him. What on earth is going on in this story? Let's walk through it. The first thing to know is that in Hebrew, the word for wrestle is like the word for Jacob. So it's like the text says, he Jacobed him. God met Jacob and Jacobed him. He wrestled with him. Jacob has spent his life wrestling, not literally, but he's battled and fought for stuff and tried to make it go his way. He's tried to overcome his insecurities by just accumulating things, by having a materially enjoyable life. By wrestling with him, God is saying, Jacob, really, I'm the one that you've been wrestling with all your life. The problem beneath all your problems is that you're trying to fight me. The problem is your lack of relationship with me. And this wrestling match is Jacob letting it all out. He gets to let out all of his hurt and frustration. And they're there for hours. They wrestle till dawn. And God's fine. He can go on forever. He's God. But Jacob is so full of determination that he keeps this fight going on for hours. He just won't surrender. And then out of nowhere, his opponent just touches his side and wrenches his hip out of place. Jacob is not wrestling a normal man. And now Jacob is done. He can't fight. He can't run away. He knows this person could easily have destroyed him, but hasn't. And Jacob keeps holding on to him, though, and he says a strange thing. He says, I will not let you go unless you bless me. I will not let you go unless you bless me. He realized he was now at the end of his self-sufficiency. He can't do anything else. He can't go and make things work his way. He can't manipulate Esau. He can't run away from Esau. He can't even stand up properly. And the point is this. If God has put you in a place like this in your life, which he does with everybody eventually, I do believe that, it's so that you can see what it's like to get your security from him. Remember, Jacob's life was defined by the desire to get his dad's approval. Many of us have experienced similar things. Well, here, he gets God's approval. And that is absolutely open to every single person. That's the key to being free from insecurity. When the greatest person that there is knows you at your worst and still expresses love towards you, that changes everything. If you know the love of God, you don't need to fish for compliments or hide in the shadows or be devastated when someone contradicts you or dress in animal hair and pretend to be your brother. Because the thing that you want, you already have. Love and approval. The kind of love and approval that absolutely trumps and destroys what anybody else might say about you. That's what God brings. So Jacob says, bless me, I'm holding on to you, bless me. In other words, he's saying to God, give me your approval. I want your seal of approval. And God says a strange thing in response again. He says, tell me your name. Tell me your name. Now, here and now, names don't always mean a great deal, but back then, your name was your identity and your character. It was who you were. So when God says, what's your name? He's saying, Jacob, who are you really? Tell me who you really are. When Jacob's dad asked him who he was, he said, I'm Esau. He lied out of desperation for approval. He wasn't himself. Now before God, he says, yeah, I'm Jacob. I'm Jacob, the one who wrestles, the liar, the deceiver, the cheater. That's me. He owns who he is. God has pushed him into reality. God asked Jacob for his name, not because he didn't know, of course he knew. He wanted to see if Jacob was willing to say who he really was. And he's pushed him to the point where he will. So this is a sort of confession from Jacob, saying who he is. He's owning it. He's very vulnerable. And look at how God reacts to him after a whole night of wrestling. Your name will no longer be Jacob. From now on, you'll be called Israel, because you fought with God and with men and have won. This is incredible. God changes identity. Jacob, you're no longer identified with how you used to operate. You're now identified by how you relate to me. So when he changes his name, when he says you're Israel, Israel literally means God contended or triumphant with God. And that's now what God says is his identity. And he says to Jacob, basically, you won. You won the wrestling match, which he didn't really. We'll come back to that. Jacob then asks for his opponent's name, and God doesn't answer. He's more interested in something else. He rewards Jacob. He looks at Jacob, insecure, deceitful, wrestling Jacob, who is now at his weakest, and says, you're the winner. Now, to be fair, the wrestling match kind of ended in a draw. Nobody really won. But in a fair fight, a 90-year-old man with a bust hip isn't going to beat the God of the universe, I don't think. It's not happening. So he blesses him, and he gives him his approval and his acceptance. So what's going on here? What is this story about? It's not just that Jacob became weak and vulnerable because he was having a hard time and then found God because he was needy. What happens is God, while demonstrating his strength, became weak so that he could rescue Jacob. This is a story about God more than about Jacob. In wrestling, your opponent is supposed to be of about the same weight class. You're supposed to weigh about the same so that it's fair. But God intentionally becomes weaker. He doesn't put all of his weight on Jacob. If he did, Jacob would have just been crushed. He would have lost. God made himself weak so that he didn't overpower Jacob. God could have won the physical fight, but then he would have lost the thing that he actually wanted in the first place, Jacob. He declared himself loser of the fight so that he could win the man. That's what God wants out of this. And God always does this. You see, the story points forward to the main story of the Bible, thousands of years later, where God wins through defeat. He'll lose the fight to get the man. That's what God does. Thousands of years later, Jesus is crucified with the full weight of God's power on him. He takes the full weight of our self-sufficiency, our Jacobness, our insecurity onto himself. He dies to win us. Jacob didn't get the full weight of God on him. He just got a small restrained touch to his hip to show that he was weak. But Jesus was crushed instead. Jacob, God blessed Jacob, who deserved to be crushed, because one day God crushed Jesus, who deserved to be blessed. That's what this story points to. So that's the story of Jacob. Well, it's some of it. There's loads of other fun stuff if you care to read Genesis. It's amazing. But I asked the question at the beginning, what would it look like for you to be free from insecurity? I don't know for you personally. It's different for everybody. It depends what you're insecure about. But I want to suggest a few things based on Jacob's story. And I'm aware this is a lifelong thing. This isn't something that happens overnight. But I just want to suggest some things that come out of Jacob's story. Firstly, why not talk to God with brutal honesty about yourself? I want to invite you to do what I think is the first step in this. See where God is wrestling with you, where your insecurities are coming to the surface, and be honest with God. Don't do the platitude prayers and the long words and the superficial, boring requests. Say to God what you really think about him and about what your life is like right now. Say the stuff that you feel like you're not supposed to say to God. You might not even believe in God, but give this a go. See what happens. Start speaking to him. Tell him where you're annoyed that life isn't how you'd like it to be. Tell him what bothers and discomforts you. That's the beginning of exactly the kind of relationship that God wants. If God is the way that he is in this story, full of restraint and patience, is he not completely safe to open your life up to? Secondly, no, really, talk to God. I'm not just saying it because it sounds like the nice churchy answer, but because it's the best answer. So important, I've made it into 2 points. Third thing, get perspective from other people. I shared earlier about my insecurity about the sound of my own voice. And it didn't change overnight, it took a long time. Of course, there's plenty of other things that I still need to work on. But one way that changed was that I shared my insecurity with other people who pointed out how ridiculous it was. And then I reciprocated with them as well, just in different people over the course of life. You know, there's no record in Genesis of Jacob ever sharing his inner life with anybody else until he wrestles with God in his 90s. Don't leave it that long. If you don't already know, there are loads of people in this room who are as insecure as you are. Why not open up to them? Why not chat with them? You never know how you'll benefit from doing that. We'd also love to pray for you at the end of the service. There'll be people here, or myself, or others who would love to pray with you if there's something that you particularly want to share this morning. Fourthly, if you're ready for it, ask God to put you in situations where you'll have to face your insecurities. Anybody feel comfortable about that? God didn't come and wrestle with Jacob till he was very old. And when he did, it was at, from Jacob's point of view, the worst possible moment when he was about to go and meet his brother again. But I think Jacob had opportunities to deal with things a lot earlier. He just kept running away, and God let him take his time and do his thing up to a point. But I'm convinced that life is freer, richer, more fun the earlier we deal with those things, the things that really entrap us. Imagine if earlier in life, Jacob had worked through his insecurities by talking them through with some of the people, and he'd seen some progress. What a difference would that have made to Jacob's story? So if you dare, and I'm not sure that I do, but if you dare, why not ask God to put you in situations where you have to face the uncomfortable insecurities in your life, where you can't hide, if you dare? How might you grow if you do? As a close, I said earlier that Jacob is the most mentioned person after God in the whole Bible. That's because even though his life ends at kind of towards the end of Genesis, he's invoked again and again throughout the Bible. All over the place, God calls himself the God of Jacob. And people speak to God as the God of Jacob. Well, why is that? It's because for God to be the God of all these heroic, respected Old Testament people is fine. But the God of the Bible primarily is not just the God of the heroic. He's the God of the weak. He's the God of people like Jacob. Because all of us, in our own ways, are like Jacob, are we not? That's when you all say yes. Yes, we're all like Jacob. We're all insecure. We all need reminders that we're weak. We all need to wrestle with God. And we all need Jesus to be crushed so that we can be blessed. And that's exactly what God does. Jacob is a victim and a villain. You know, he's a victim of other people's way of treating him, but he's a villain in terms of he's responsible for his own actions. But God understands him and forgives him. He takes on his hurt. He wrestles through life's issues with him, and he's willing to do exactly the same with us. Let me pray, and the band are going to lead us again. Thank you, God, for what we can learn from the life of Jacob. Thank you that he's the everyman. He's the one that's like us. He tries to make life work in his own way, but he's riddled with insecurity. It controls and defines him. And we want to have the courage to wrestle with you, Lord, today and in the days and weeks to come. Help us face our insecurities. Help us acknowledge what they are. Talk them through with others. Talk them through with you. And we thank you that Jesus was crushed so that we don't have to be, and that you deal with us patiently and gently. Help us to worship, as we continue singing, the God who does this for us, who reaches out to us, who takes the initiative, who comes and wrestles us when we need it. Amen.